Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
UTPB Homecoming features Selena Tribute Band. Taking place throughout the week, University of Texas Permian Basin's Homecoming culminates Friday with a parade, bonfire, and Selena Tribute Band. The occasion concludes Saturday with the university facing off in football against Simon Fraser University, a team from Canada. The theme is UTPB Goes to the World Cup. Assistant Director of Student Life Emily Banda said the kickoff is at 6 p.m. this Saturday at Ratliff Stadium. For tickets, visit utpbfalcons.com. We have some events that are going to the public. On Wednesday night, we'll be showing the Selena movie at 8 p.m. on the quad. On Thursday, we'll have a lip sync battle with our student organizations, and we'll have an MC who does magic and illusion. The community is welcome to come to see that as well. But Friday is really our big day. Friday, we have our parade at 6:30. At 7 o'clock, we'll have our block party and the Selena tribute band Los Chicos, Del 512. We'll be performing. We have food being sponsored by HEB, so that's amazing. Then our pep rally begins at 8 p.m. and we'll conclude with the fireworks, and then the Selena tribute band will come out and do another set, Banda said. She added that she's seen the band perform and they're amazing. Banda said the band is from Arizona and they are all educators in their day jobs, so we're excited to have them, she said. The parade route will start at the Founders Building parking lot. It will come out, head toward UTPB Circle. Once it gets to UTPB Circle, they'll head west toward the library. It'll go in front of the library, in front of the Mesa Building, and we'll conclude at the Kirk Building soccer field. That's when we'll have the food and the music and everything available, Banda said. There will be inflatables for kids and the whole event is free. It should be a really good time, she added. For Friday's event, Banda said they hope to have 500 people. They decided on the Selena tribute band because Selena connects with everybody and gives them a sense of pride. But something that we've seen in this region specifically is that it doesn't matter people's race, nationalities. If a Selena song comes on, people will be dancing. I mean, good dancing, bad dancing. I think that Selena and her trajectory just really connects with people, Banda said. Being here in Midland, Odessa, a predominantly Hispanic community, and us serving a primarily Hispanic student body, it just seemed like a great choice, especially when we're wanting to celebrate what it means to be a Falcon. That's one of the primary reasons why, she added. With the theme, they're going to be giving away some soccer jerseys that they customize that highlight the region. The shirts include cacti and pump jacks. They're really a neat design, so we're excited. We have a 4-on-4 soccer tournament coming up, a lot of fun stuff related to the theme. All of our student organizations that are competing are representing a country, Banda said. Assistant Dean of Students, Director of Student Life, Adrian Lodge, said Homecoming is one of the most fun events they put on. It's an opportunity for our students, faculty, and staff to be able to get together outside of the classroom and outside of the office, and it's a great opportunity for us to connect with our Midland-Odessa community as well, Lodge said. This is Lodge's 8th Homecoming, and she predicts it will continue to grow. It only seems to be getting bigger and better as we move along. Everyone is responding really well to these types of events, partnering with us, coming out and enjoying being a part of this community together, she added. Career criminal gets 60 years. A career criminal from Odessa who fled from police officers in June 2021 and crashed into a car carrying two bystanders was sentenced to 60 years in prison Wednesday. It took jurors in the 70th Ector County District Court 30 minutes Tuesday to convict Roberto Serrano Franco, 45, of aggravated assault on a public servant and evading arrest with a vehicle, and less than an hour to sentence him to 60 years on each count. The sentences will run concurrently. Because Franco had four prior felony convictions, the jury had the option of giving Franco 25 to 99 years or life on each charge. Under Texas law, Franco will be eligible for parole after serving half of his aggravated assault sentence or 30 years, whichever is less. As for the evading charge, he's eligible for good time credits and will have to serve one quarter of his sentence or 15 years, whichever is less. Assistant Ector County District Attorneys Melissa Williams and Gabriel Maliha called several law enforcement officers to the stand who testified they discovered a stolen work truck in a garage around 2:30 a.m. June 23, 2021. As they were taking one suspect into custody, they said Franco came bursting through a half-closed garage door in the stolen vehicle, sending debris flying. Jurors heard that Franco drove down the alley. He struck another vehicle, sending it into one of the officers, causing minor injuries. Jurors heard testimony that officers fired 19 shots at Franco as he fled, but he escaped with only a finger injury. Franco then went through a red light and struck a vehicle carrying a mother and daughter on their way to dialysis. Charges pertaining to those victims were dismissed prior to trial. Officers found the wrecked truck and Franco the following day. Franco testified he went to the garage to amicably resolve a dispute with another man over a woman and didn't realize the people waiting outside the garage were law enforcement officers, despite the fact officers testified the red and blue lights on their patrol units were flashing at the time. During the punishment phase of the trial, Franco said he was raised by a father who sold cocaine and racehorses for a living, and he began bagging the cocaine for his father at the age of 9. His mother spent most of his youth in federal prison, he said. Franco acknowledged he's been convicted multiple times of being a drug dealer and for committing a robbery. While the integration process has been my biggest difficulty, Franco said, in the future, I plan on doing good no matter where I am at, whether it's prison or in the free world. Defense attorney Kevin Acker pleaded for mercy for Franco, reminding the jury of his difficult upbringing. He suggested the criminal justice system and Franco are equally responsible for his inability to stay free of drugs. Williams told the jurors they need to ask themselves how long they want the community to be safe from Franco, especially since he's proven he will lie, he will steal, he will do anything he can get away with from law enforcement. While the circumstances of his childhood are regrettable, at some point everyone's responsible for taking control of their life, Williams said. She told jurors Franco literally won't stop committing crimes and only they can stop him. He got every motivation to get up there, all mild-mannered and soft-spoken, and promised to do better next time, Williams said. Judge Dean Whalen presided over the trial. Quick Hits, Bilingual Storytime. The Ector County Library, 321 West 5th Street, has scheduled a bilingual storytime event at 10 a.m. today in the Children's Department. Hear children's stories read in English and Spanish. Visit ector.lib.tx.us or tinyurl.com/kmkrmp6w. Novel Adventures Book Club. The Ector County Library, 321 West 5th Street, has scheduled a book club event from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. today in the Children's Department. Participants will make bookmarks. The event is free. Visit ector.lib.tx.us or tinyurl.com/kmkrmp6w. Knit and Stitch. The Ella Noel Art Museum, 4919 East University Boulevard, has scheduled Knit and Stitch at 6 p.m. today. Knit and Stitch is a knitters, quilters, or for those who like to join in on current project and share techniques and ideas. There is no charge to participate. Visit noelartmuseum.org. World Ballet Series, Swan Lake. Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center, 1310 North FM 1788 Midland, will present World Ballet Series Swan Lake at 7 p.m. today. Doors open at 6 p.m. Visit wagnernoel.com. Scholarship Ball. The University of Texas Permian Basin will present the inaugural Scholarship Ball today at 6 p.m. at the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Convention Center, 305 East 5th Street. Admission fees support all UTPB students. More than 90% of enrolled students at UTPB are eligible for scholarship funds, and many students depend on these dollars to complete their college degrees. All proceeds from the scholarship ball support this important initiative. Tickets start at $250 for an individual. Sponsorship opportunities are available. To sponsor or learn more, or purchase tickets and sponsorships, visit tinyurl.com/3z7krsixbk. Walk a mile in her shoes. Safe Place of the Permian Basin has scheduled a charity walk to bring awareness to domestic violence on today at Centennial Park, 200 West Wall Street, Midland. Check-ins is at 3:30 p.m. Walk starts at 4 p.m. and ends at 5 p.m. This event is meant to bring awareness to the issue of domestic violence in our area by creating an environment that goes against gender stereotypes, by having men walk around the park in high heels, allowing a space to consider many of the underlying causes of domestic violence with less defensiveness and denial. The event is free, however, donations are encouraged. To learn more or to register, visit tinyurl.com/BD6EFCFB. Jurors hear from accused in injury to child trial. Jurors in the trial of a 25-year-old man accused of purposefully running down a teenager with his truck last year heard from both the teen and the defendant Wednesday. Homero Villa Aguilar is facing one count of injury to a child, a Class 1 felony, punishable by up to 99 years in prison. On Wednesday afternoon, Homero Carrion Jr., 15, testified that on April 18, 2021, he'd spent the day on his family's property on South Blackfoot Avenue in West Odessa tending to their roosters, hens, horses, and other animals. That evening, Carrion said he and his father, Homero Sr., went to visit his grandfather, Octavio Rodriguez, for a barbecue near North Moss Avenue and West 3rd Street. After getting home, his father asked him to turn out the light in their stable, and when he was done, he heard Aguilar, his sister's common-law husband, yelling from the travel trailer they lived in. When he stepped inside, Carrion testified, he saw the bathroom door was broken, a pot was on the ground, and his sister, Leza, was crying. She told him Aguilar had hit her. A short time later, Carrion decided to walk to his house a short distance away on the same property, leaving Leza in the travel trailer with their mother, Mercedes, and his three-year-old niece, Maya Leza. As he started to head home, he heard Aguilar's truck suddenly accelerate, and the next thing he knew, he was being hit by it. "It hit my left leg, and I bounced against the RV," Carrion said. Aguilar, who hit the RV with the truck as well, threw the truck into reverse, and as he tried to run away, Aguilar struck him again, this time pinning him against the RV, Carrion said. Aguilar then fled the scene. He remembers screaming in pain and realizing he couldn't feel his legs, Carrion said. His mother sat down beside him, telling him to calm down, and an ambulance was on the way. He doesn't remember much about the trip to the hospitals here in Odessa and in Lubbock, other than the road to Lubbock was a bouncing one, and he was in terrible pain until everything went black, Carrion said. The teen said he doesn't remember how many surgeries he's had, but he now wears a colostomy bag, and skin from his back was grafted onto the back of his thighs. He spent months in the hospital, hooked up to IVs, a feeding tube, and a catheter, and he couldn't walk for 2 months. Carrion testified he had to go through physical therapy and remained in counseling. He's thought of committing suicide plenty of times, he told Assistant Ector District Attorney Howard Schultz. The teenager, who only appeared to cry when talking about his colostomy, showed jurors the bag and the scars on his back. Carrion told Aguilar's defense attorney, Israel Guardiola, he never saw Aguilar act violently toward anyone before that night, and Aguilar got along well with everyone in his family. Aguilar testified through a Spanish-speaking interpreter. He dated Leisa Carrion for about a year, and he lived with the Carrion family for about 5 months before he and Leisa moved into the RV he purchased 2 weeks before the incident. He considered Leisa to be his wife, he said. Aguilar testified he spent the evening of the incident with Homer Carrion Sr. and Homer Carrion Jr. near 57th Street, not Moss Avenue. And he said they went to watch cockfights, not eat barbecue. Moreover, their host's last name was Ray, not Rodriguez, he said. The defendant told jurors he drank somewhere between 2 and 4 beers before picking up Leisa from work. Aguilar testified he wasn't intoxicated, but Leisa was. He told jurors she became upset with him upon learning he'd been to the cockfights and left her daughter with her mother. They continued to argue after they picked up her daughter and once they got home, but it wasn't a serious fight and he never got mad, Aguilar said. Eventually, Aguilar said his in-laws showed up at the RV upset and Mercedes Carrion told him to leave. He remembers pushing on the bedroom door so he could get his clothes, and the door ended up leaning as a result. After taking 2 loads of clothes out to his truck, Aguilar said he spotted Homero Carrion Jr. out of the corner of his eye near the RV with a gun. Aguilar told jurors he got into his truck and put it in reverse to leave, but his brother-in-law pointed the gun at the time, holding it sideways. I got scared and I just went forward with the truck. I thought he was going to shoot me, Aguilar said. The defendant testified he went to his aunt's home, but she wasn't there. Upset and not knowing what to do, Aguilar said he left his truck there and walked several miles to a Pilot, where he had ended up running into a friend who was heading to Mexico. They went to Mexico together, but he voluntarily returned several days later after learning from his aunt the police wanted to talk to him. Aguilar testified he didn't know how badly Homero Jr. was injured until he was arrested. Investigators testified previously they did not locate a weapon at the scene. During cross-examination from Schultz, Aguilar said his former wife and her parents were liars when they said he was intoxicated and possibly on drugs that night, and when Leisa said they argued over her refusal to fill out a job application for him. He also said his former wife lied when she said he broke some lights and smacked her daughter 1 week prior to the incident. He insisted he never became angry, and that night of April 18th, he denied breaking down both the bathroom door and the bedroom door that night. Why did Mia Leisa start crying that night? Schultz asked Aguilar. I don't remember if she cried or didn't cry, Aguilar answered. Wasn't it because you called her a brat? Schultz asks. Isn't that why she ran to the bathroom and you broke the door down? When Schultz tried to firm up the details of Aguilar hitting his brother-in-law, Aguilar told the prosecutor he couldn't remember specifics as far as the distances involved or how Carrion ended up landing where he did. He continued to insist, however, that he hit Carrion in self-defense, that he hit him just once, and that he did not pin him against the RV at any point. Aguilar told Schultz he can't explain how his brother-in-law got the crush injuries described by a doctor earlier this week. It's something terrible when somebody points a gun at you, Aguilar said. I don't know if I was angry or scared. I just wanted to push him a little bit because I wanted to leave. Aguilar also insisted it was just coincidence his friend showed up at the Pilot in his time of need as he lost his cell phone that night. The defendant acknowledged under cross-examination he never called police to report being threatened by his brother-in-law, and he never called his wife or his in-laws to check on his brother-in-law. Aguilar told his attorney, his mother-in-law, and his wife never expressed concern about him driving earlier that night, despite testifying they thought he was drunk or high. He returned to Odessa because, "I don't feel I'm guilty. What I did was defend my life," he told Guardiola. The defense is expected to wrap up its case Thursday morning. Judge James Rush of the 244th Ector County District Court is presiding over the trial. Obituary for Thursday, October 6. James Ratliff Hurt, Jr. was born on November 4, 1953, born and raised on the family ranch in Odessa. Jay is preceded in death by his grandparents, Sam Hurt and Mary Hurt McCollum, and Pete and Helen Wheeler. His in-laws, A.C. Thomas and Norma Jean, Johnson Bryce, and his nephew, Ben Heap. He is survived by his wife, Vicki Carol Thomas Hurt, his parents, James R. Buzz Hurt and Betsy Triplett Hurt, and Freddie Jean Wheeler, his siblings, Mary Helen Johnson, Joe Hurt and wife, Sherry, Sally Bolton and husband, Toya, and Benny Thomas and wife, Susan, his daughters, Mary Hurt, Angie Hurt King and husband, Cliff and Jamie Hurt, and several grandchildren, nieces and nephews. His gentle spirit and kind demeanor will be greatly missed. We rejoice knowing that he has arrived with his father and shall once again ride along the land he loved so much. Memorial service will be held at 1 p.m. Friday, October 7th at the Bridge Church in Odessa. Pastors Donnie Williams and Griffin Jones are officiating. Arrangements are entrusted to Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. To send condolences to the family, please sign his guest book at www.sunsetodessa.com. Death notices. Bobby Reed, 75, of Odessa, died Monday, October 3rd in Odessa. Funeral service is scheduled for 2 p.m. October 8th at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Byron Williams is officiating. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Dennis Glenn Van Nuys, Midland, 73, died Friday, September 30th in Midland. Services are pending with American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Midland. Evarado Topo Vargas, 43, of Odessa, died Saturday, October 1st in Odessa. Mass will be celebrated at 10 a.m. Friday, October 7th at St. Anthony Catholic Church. Rosary will be at 7 p.m. Thursday night at Acres West 24-Hour Chapel. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Anna Miriam Williams, 70, of Odessa, died Sunday, October 2nd in Odessa. Graveside service is scheduled for 2 p.m. October 6th at American Heritage Cemetery. Arrangements are by American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Midland.
Hello, this is Michael, and I'm reading sports articles from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. We'll begin with the MRT. LHS report, Rebels expecting a tough challenge from 4-1 Friendship, by Christopher Hattern, published October 6th. The best football game to kick off District 2-6A play this week might be in Wolfworth, as Friendship, 4-1, hosts Legacy 2-3 for a 7 p.m. start at People's Bank Stadium. The Rebels were picked to win District 2-6A by Dave Campbell's Texas Football Preview magazine, while the Tigers were tabbed to finish third in the 6-team district. Friendship heads into the opener on a 4-game winning streak, and it finished off non-district play with a 56-52 win over defending New Mexico State champion Rio Rancho Cleveland on September 23rd. Meanwhile, the Rebels head into league play on a 2-game losing streak after they lost to 2 San Antonio area powers in consecutive weeks, with a 35-28 overtime loss to Cibolo Steel on September 16th and a 60-50 defeat to Converse Judson on September 23rd. Despite its losing record, LHS played what is considered the toughest non-district schedule in 2-6A. The Rebels will be shooting for at least a share of their fifth straight district title this season. When you only have 5 district games, a loss is magnified, LHS head coach Clint Hartman said. I think our kids understand that. I think they're tired of being off for a week. I think they're ready to play. You can tell that they're kind of chomping at the bit a little bit. Both the Tigers and Rebels have capable offenses that have highly productive quarterbacks and deep receiving core. LHS is spearheaded by future Division I quarterback Marcos Davila, who has thrown for 1,341 yards and 18 touchdown passes, while throwing only 4 interceptions. The Rebel receiving core is highlighted by Deonta Sonier, who has made 28 receptions for 476 yards and has scored 9 total TDs thus far. The Tigers' offense is led by junior quarterback Hudson Hutchison, who has completed 72.3% of his passes for 1,370 yards, 12 TD passes, and 5 interceptions. Hutchison's loaded receiving group includes super sophomore Leighton Stone, 519 receiving yards, 7 TDs. His twin brother, Landon Hutchison, 415 receiving yards, 2 TDs, and 6'6" Tate Beals. Hartman said, "The Tigers' offensive line is the best he has seen at Friendship." The unit is highlighted by center Isaiah Kima, a 6'4", 290-pound lineman with 18 Division I offers. "They look like a playoff team to me on film," Hartman said of the Tigers. "They make plays when they have to. They throw the ball very well. When you throw the ball and you catch well, you always have a chance. The good thing is we feel like we have a really good secondary this year, so it helps us. At least the matchup helps us." The Rebels have won 5 straight in the series, but the games have been more competitive in recent years. In the 2019 meeting with current Texas Tech starter Donovan Smith at quarterback, Friendship took a 28-7 lead on LHS before the Rebels came back and prevailed with a 59-36 win. LHS held a 21-14 halftime lead over Friendship in the 2020 matchup before pulling away for a 50-21 win. The Tigers led the Rebels 21-14 during the 2021 meeting before LHS rolled past Friendship for a 68-28 victory. Hartman, hired in 2016, and Friendship head coach Jay Northcutt, hired in 2017, are the district's 2 longest tenured head coaches. "It will be fun," Hartman said. "We're probably more familiar with them because their head coach, their offensive coordinator, Caleb Holt, and their defensive coordinator, Mark Ribaldo, have been there longer than most teams in the district. Not as long as me, but they're only 1 year behind us. When you play people commonly, you start figuring some things out, and they figured out things about us. We will see what that is. We feel good. We're getting some guys back, like running back Zeke Luna. Those guys should help us. It will be fun to watch, but it will be a good challenge. I'm looking forward to it. In this district, you better bring your A game." MHS Report. "Bulldogs look to carry momentum into district opener," by Christopher Hattern, published October 6th. Midland High is off to its best start since the 2016 season, but now the Bulldogs will finally get to see how they'll fare against their District 2 6A counterparts. MHS, 4-1, hosts San Angelo Central, 3-2, in its District 2 6A opener at 7 p.m. Friday at Astound Broadband Stadium. The Bobcats have been a nemesis to the Bulldogs over the past decade, with 8 straight wins in the series. MHS last beat Central with a 35-28 win in 2011. The Bulldogs roll into the opener coming off a school record 615-yard rushing performance and a 74-14 win over El Paso Andres on September 23rd. It was the second time this season that Midland High's triple option offense has broke the school record for rushing yards. One of the matchups to watch will be the Bulldogs' highly productive run offense against Central, which has allowed 38.8 points per game. MHS head football coach Thad Fortune says both coaching staffs are familiar with each other's styles, dating back to his days at Odessa Permian when he was the offensive coordinator from 2014 to 2020. "I still think that they're very sound and they're physical and they play hard," Fortune said of the Bobcat defense. "Those things can cover up whatever mistakes they've had that they want to clean up. Everybody going into district is trying to get better on all 3 phases. Their defense is very capable. We're very familiar with one another just from being in the district together for so many matchups. They're very capable, and they're very sound, and they play very hard. So you always know what you're going to get that from Central. They do a good job. We've got our hands full on both sides of the ball. When the Bulldogs are on defense, they will face Central senior quarterback Tyler Hill, one of the district's top playmakers. The dual-threat QB has completed 63% of his passes for 1,008 yards, 7 TD passes, and 2 interceptions, while rushing 64 times for 724 yards and 11 rushing TDs. Hill's running and passing ability was both on display in the Bobcats' final non-district game when he broke out of a grasp of a pass rusher, scrambled around, and threw a Hail Mary for a 40-yard TD pass as time expired to lift Central to a 63-61 win over Abilene Wiley. The performance earned Hill the Built Ford Tough Class 6A Player of the Week after he combined for 542 total yards of offense and accounted for 7 total TDs. "He's as good of a player as we'll see," Fortune said. "He can throw, he can run. If he gets a seam, I don't know if I've seen him get caught yet this year on tape. We've got to do a really good job of containing him, limit his big plays. He breaks tackles. We've got to do a good job of getting a lot of people to the ball, and then offensively, we have to sustain drives and limit the number of series he gets." The top four teams in the six-team District 2 6A will advance to the postseason. MHS, which hasn't reached the playoffs since 2018, will have a better chance to reach the playoffs after its district was realigned from 7 teams to 6, with Abilene High moving down to Class 5A Division 2. But that also means every district game becomes more magnified with only 5 of them. 5 of the 6 district teams finished non-district play with winning records, as 2021 district champion Legacy was the lone exception. "The district is as deep as it's ever been," Fortune said. "There's a lot of teams. Everybody thinks they can make the playoffs and has a lot of hope. Every game is going to be very, very important. This is no different for us. Opening with Central at home is very big for our program, and we want to go out there and see the kids play really hard and do the things that we can control and then see where the chips fall." We'll return to the Midland Reporter Telegram for area teams and the private school report after we read a couple of articles from the Odessa American. Thursday, October 6th. High School Football Week 7. Panthers ready for rival Broncos. Permian brings balanced attack to contest. It's the game that football fans in Odessa circle on the calendar when the schedules are released each season. Permian versus Odessa High, and it's been everywhere in the District 2 6A schedules. Opening game, penultimate game, middle of the road, etc. This year, it's the district opener for the Panthers and the Broncos, which possibly is the silver lining for both teams. Depending on the outcome, one team is in great shape to run toward a district title. The other still has 4 games remaining to make a charge at a playoff spot. The Panthers are clicking on both sides of the football heading into the matchup. Led by quarterback Rodney Hall, they're averaging 333 yards per game, 176.8 rushing, 155.8 passing. Defensively, they're averaging 60 tackles a game, including 12 tackles for loss in each contest, the defensive line creating havoc from hash mark to hash mark, allowing the linebackers and defensive backs the freedom to go sideline to sideline. Permian has created 14 turnovers, 6 interception, 8 fumble recoveries, and knocked down 19 other passes. The Panthers' defenders are going to be busy against the Broncos, who came into the game completing nearly 70% of their passes and averaged 291.4 yards through the air each contest. Key matchup: Permian defensive back Bryce Woody against Odessa High wide receiver Ivan Carrion. Carrion, at 6'6", presents a matchup problem for almost everyone he goes against. Woody, at 6'4", gives the Panthers a chance to defend the jump balls that Carrion more often than not comes down with. Closing in. Hall has been on the field for 27 games for the Panthers since his sophomore season, 2020. The first year was in a breakup role to Harper Terry, while last year was his first full year at the helm of the program. Hall threw for 2 touchdowns in limited playing time as a sophomore and then tossed 18 during the 2021 season. He has 10 through 5 games this year as the Panthers battled through some offensive struggles early in the season. Still, Hall is within shouting distance of a career mark for the Panthers program. Vic Vines, 1977-78, and Mike Winchell, 1987-88, both finished their time at Permian with 34 career touchdown passes. Hall, with 30 to his credit right now, should, if everything goes well, set a new mark during the next 5 weeks of District 2-6A play. Lower levels. After a week off, the Panthers' freshman and junior varsity teams face crosstown rival Odessa High Thursday at Ratliff Stadium. The freshmen will play on the south fields, with the freshman white squad facing the Broncos at 5 p.m., followed by the freshman black at 6:30 p.m. The JV white squad takes to the Ratliff Stadium turf at 5 p.m., with the JV black following at 6:30 p.m. Broncos set for district opener. Crosstown rivalry adds pressure. Odessa High's best star since 2018 is nice, but the team's focus is elsewhere this week. The Broncos host crosstown rival Permian at 7 p.m. Friday at Ratliff Stadium. "This is our biggest game that we have right now," Coach Dusty Ortiz said. "It's not like it's just the crosstown rival, but it's our first district game." "The first district game is the key line," Ortiz said, "because the Broncos are winless in district openers since 2014. The Broncos will have their hands full, as they will have to contain the Panthers' high-octane offense, led by quarterback Rodney Hall, who has thrown for 781 yards and 10 touchdowns this season. "Permian's offense requires discipline," Ortiz said. "That's one thing that we've really worked on this past week, is making sure that everybody takes care of their assignments. Everybody's running to the ball, getting off blocks, making sure that we tackle the guy that is part of our responsibility." Defensive backs coach Clayton Roberts knows that his secondary has to contain the Panthers' offense. "We have watched a lot of film, and I've told the guys that they have to understand what to expect before play happens," Roberts said. "As coaches, we have to put them in the right position to make plays." Junior safety Javen Gonzalez concurred. "We have to keep outside containment. Do not let any big plays happen," Gonzalez said. "Just focus on a down, and if something wrong happens, just forget about it and move on to the next play." Robert said the players have to believe in each other with Permian's multitude of misdirection plays on offense. "If everybody on defense does their job and trusts each other, then we'll be fine," Robert said. "Especially when Permian runs some of their triple option stuff, the players have to trust their gut and their teammates to do their job. If so, we will be able to make enough plays to pull off an upset." Run, run, run. The Broncos are 3-1 this season when the team collectively carries the ball for at least 25 times. This success results in the passing game opening up for more explosive plays. "Running the ball 25 times is part of our game plan, as we have to get our run game going," Ortiz said. "We have to give the running backs the ball. We have 3 great ones with 3 different abilities, and we're definitely going to feed them the ball and try to get into 2nd and 5 situations instead of 2nd and 10 situations." No injuries. The bye week between the 35-14 non-district win over Schertz Clemens 2 weeks ago and this week's much-anticipated match against Permian has allowed the team to heal and be fully healthy, according to Ortiz. "We've taken advantage of the extra days to get our legs back onto us," Ortiz said. "It was just the time to recover and kind of get a soft game plan. And so for Permian, we took advantage of the extra time." As for the injury front, the team is healthy heading into Friday. "We had some bumps and bruises, but nothing serious," Ortiz said. "Everybody's going to be full go this week." Lower level. The Odessa High junior varsity and freshman teams had the week off as well last week. This week, the teams play on Thursday at Ratliff Stadium. The freshmen start their game at 5 p.m. at Ratliff South, just outside the stadium. The JV squads play their games at 6:30 p.m. inside Ratliff Stadium. Now we'll return to the Midland Reporter-Telegram. Our first article is Greenwood Turns Its Focus to District by Oscar Leroy, published October 5th. The Greenwood football team saw that it could win a road game despite dealing with plenty of adversity early last week. The Rangers overcame the loss of starting quarterback Ty Flowers to a shoulder injury and three turnovers to end the non-district portion of their schedule with a 31-6 victory over San Angelo Lakeview on Friday night. Greenwood, 3-3, used both Rance Purser and Dylan Dominguez at quarterback as the Rangers finally pulled away from the Chiefs to get some momentum going into the District 3-4A Division II home opener against Snyder, 2-4. "We kind of got things clicking in the second half," said head coach Rusty Purser. "That second quarter was a lot of frustration for us, between Ty getting hurt and the turnovers. We just didn't play very well. In the second half, we came out and played a solid game." Rance Purser did a nice job filling in as he was 6 of 8 passing for 102 yards and a TD. Rusty said his son has played quarterback off and on throughout his playing career and has a good understanding of the offense. Rusty Purser said Flowers suffered an AC joint separation that could keep him out until the October 28th game against Graham. Until then, the Rangers will turn to Rance Purser and or Dominguez to fill in at quarterback. "Dylan has gotten more comfortable in the last 2 days, and I think he'll probably play the most," Rusty Purser said. "If we get into some situation where we need to get into a spread formation and throw the ball more, then we'll put Rance in there." The Rangers will also sit out senior wide receiver and deep snapper Mitchell Olson, who hurt his foot in practice on Monday. Rusty Purser said they are close in getting wide receiver Zane Ogle back from a knee injury. Rusty Purser said his defense did a good job of containing the Chiefs as they only had 232 total yards. He said the Chiefs took advantage of having a 6-foot, 230-pound receiver going up against the smaller Ranger cornerbacks. "The defense had a good game plan going in as they were going to try to frustrate Lakeview and try to force them to do some things that they were not used to. And I thought the defense executed the plan very well," he said. Like Greenwood, Rusty Purser and said Snyder is much like his team as the Tigers have dealt with several injuries, but they have always played the Rangers well. Rusty Purser said even though his team felt like it could have gotten wins against Lubbock Estacado and Canyon, it's time for his team to turn the page and play well in district. "We need to focus on a specific goal, and that's trying to win a district championship," Purser said. "I think the kids have a renewed focus on that. All three of the wins were games that we could have and should have won, and we did. In the games we should have won, hopefully we learn from those games. We also got a lot of kids reps because of all of our injuries. That will make us better because all these kids are getting to play." Andrews sees positives despite loss. Andrews coach Tom Harvey said even though his team lost 44-30 to a very talented Canyon team, he believes his team will be better because of it. The Eagles, who are now ranked number 9 in Class 4A Division 1, took advantage of two early fumbles by the Mustangs, 4-2, to jump out to a 14-0 lead. Harvey said his team just couldn't quite turn the corner after that early deficit. "They made us better," said Harvey of the Eagles. "We played some very good teams in non-district, but they're very good, and they were a step up from some of the teams we had been playing. Playing that game certainly helped us." Harvey added that his team has been dealing with injuries, but the Mustangs are starting to get some players back healthy. A boost for the team will be the return of standout wide receiver Jalen Jones, who has yet to play this season because of an injury. Jones was the District 2-4A Division 1 co-offensive MVP last year after catching 39 passes for 484 yards and 10 TDs. "I don't know how much he'll play since he's still not in pads shape, but it has really lifted our spirits to get him back," said Harvey of Jones. The Mustangs next host San Angelo Lakeview, 3-3, to begin district play on Friday, and Harvey said they are ready. "We have some injuries, but we're healthy enough," Harvey said. Lakeview is really well coached. I've known Lakeview coach Hector Guevara for 20 years, and he's always been a good coach. He's always been able to get a lot out of lesser talent, but now he's got the talent. He's tough to go against because he works so hard. Steers look to move on from loss. Big Spring doesn't have much time to think about last week's loss to Seminole with the road game to Brownwood up next to begin District 2-4A Division 1 play. They're pretty good, said Big Spring coach Cannon McWilliams of the 4-2 Lions. They played Stephenville, which is ranked number one in most polls, and they were tied with them at the half before Stephenville pulled away for a 42-21 win. They're big and physical, and they will be another good test for us. The Steers fell to 4-2 after a 63-28 loss to Seminole as the Indians quarterback Blake Flowers had 406 yards through the air. I hope we don't play somebody with that kind of speed again this year, McWilliams quipped. They were really good, but we also had some blown coverages and we're going to have to shore that up. Offensively, we have to continue to find ways to score in the red zone, especially when we're on the half 1-inch line. McWilliams said his team is excited to begin district play and believes the non-district schedule has gotten his team prepared. I feel we're battle-tested, he said. We've had a good non-district schedule, and we've been in a bunch of tight ball games and have gotten better. We had a close loss to Pampa at the beginning of the year, but we've been able to win some of those close ball games. Experience is the best teacher, and I think we learn from those six ball games. Stanton and Kahoma use open dates to get ready. Both Stanton and Kahoma were open last week, but now they're ready to begin District 4-3A Division 2 play on Friday. Stanton, 2-3, will travel to face Lubbock Roosevelt, 2-3, while Kahoma, 4-1, hosts Littlefield, 4-1. The Buffaloes snapped a three-game losing streak with a 35-14 victory over San Angelo TLCA on September 23rd as they rushed for 394 yards, led by Cameron Eisman, who had 243 yards and two TDs on 29 carries. Stanton coach Cody Hogan said his team played better against TLCA and now hopes his team can continue to improve on its offensive consistency against a tough Eagles squad. If we continue to improve and do things the right way, we'll become a better football team, Hogan said. Kahoma brings a four-game winning streak into Friday's games against the Wildcats and are coming off a 21-0 victory over Merkel on September 23rd. We're ahead of where we were at this time last year, Kahoma coach Chris Jocelyn said. These kids put in a lot of hard work in the offseason, and they've got some confidence after winning a few games. All of the teams we're about to face are good, and I told the kids that the district is long and it's a week-to-week thing. No matter what happens in this district game, we've got to be ready the following week. Littlefield, which is new to the district this year, is coming off its first loss of the season, 28-14, to Brownfield. Jocelyn said the Wildcats seem to be playing well under second-year coach Jimmy Thomas. District 7-1A Division 1 gauntlet gets underway. One of the toughest six-man districts in the state, 7-1A Division 1, will begin play on Friday as five teams will battle for two playoff spots. Grady, 2-4, visits number 7 Garden City, 5-1, while number 5 ranked Rankin, 5-1, is at Sands, 1-5. Borden County, 4-2, is idle. Garden City is coming off an impressive 81-36 victory over Van Horn, while Grady rolled past Grand Falls Royalty 62-20. Bearcats coach Jeff Jones said Grady showed that it can be a capable team. Their record doesn't show it, but they're a pretty solid team, Jones said. We have to be ready for them because they can go down and score on you. They also execute well, so you've got to know where they are on the field. They're not going to be a pushover, that's for sure. And now the private school report. Midland Christian ready to begin district slate by Oscar Leroy, published October 5th. The Midland Christian football team hopes the open week gave the Mustangs a chance to refresh and get ready for the start of TAPS Division II District 1 action on Friday. The Mustangs, 2-3, host Fort Worth All Saints, 2 and 3 at 7 p.m. Friday as the two former Division I foes face off in the league opener. MCS got what it needed before the open date as the Mustangs rolled to a 47-20 home victory against UIL Class 6A opponent Del Rio. Mustangs coach Chris Cunningham said that win went a long way into building the team's confidence. "Getting a win always goes a long way toward feeling good about the work you're putting in," Cunningham said. "No matter how process-oriented you are, the bottom line is that you want to win. A win validates a lot of the things that you're doing right. You can only continue to trust the process so much. You've got to get results. This win was a big step toward feeling good about what we've done, what we're doing, and where we're going." Cunningham said the open week was exactly what his team needed to get the players' legs out from under them and help heal some injuries. The coach added that the team has had a couple of good practices, and the players seem to have a good mindset heading into this week's game. All Saints has lost two straight games, including a 51-10 loss to a Pennsylvania private school 2 weeks ago. But the Saints have played a tough schedule and beat the Mustangs 34-22 when they were in Division I District 1 opponents last season. "It's a tough opponent, but I feel our kids are ready to match up well if we execute," Cunningham said. "They've got a very athletic quarterback, and they're big up front offensively. On defense, they have two or three good runners, and they've got physical players who make plays. It should be a good football game." Trinity looks to bounce back. Trinity will look to bounce back from a 69-22 loss to Abilene Christian on Saturday as the Chargers travel to play number 5-ranked Fort Worth Covenant Classical at 7 p.m. Friday. The Chargers, 2-3, 1-1 in TAPS, 6-man Division II District 1, were right with the Panthers through most of the first half before ACS erupted for 16 points in the final minute for a 40-22 lead at intermission. The Chargers never recovered as ACS dominated the second half and ended it with the 45-point mercy rule with 8:31 left to play. Covenant Classical, 4-1, 2-0, is coming off a 63-16 victory over Amarillo San Jacinto, thanks in part to 39 points in the second quarter. All of the Cavaliers' wins have been blowouts, and their only loss came against Abbott, 62-8, the number one ranked team in UIL Class 1A Division 1 by Dave Campbell's Texas Football.
Vasovagal syncope. "Dear Dr. Roach, I have passed out 5 times and have been diagnosed with vasovagal syncope. The last time I ended up in the emergency room and they put in a pacemaker. What can you tell me about this, and is a pacemaker a cure for this condition? The doctors tell me it can happen again. ARD. Answer: vasovagal syncope is the most common type of faint. Fainting is very common and often needs no treatment than keeping oneself hydrated, taking precautions about getting up slowly, and avoiding triggers that have caused fainting in the past. Pacemakers are only occasionally used, most commonly when a thorough evaluation of the heart has shown that the heart rate becomes dangerously low, such as a pause of greater than 3 seconds between heartbeats, causing a faint. When used appropriately, pacemakers reduce the risk of fainting by half or more, but not completely preventing further fainting."
Here was the Dear Abby column that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, October 6th. Son-in-law tired of man's rude, insulting behavior. "Dear Abby, my father-in-law, who lives out of state, regularly makes crude jokes and comments about his sex life or my sex life in my presence and in the presence of my wife, his wife, and others. He once commented to me that he would be excited to see his daughter, my wife, in bed with a woman. I have expressed to my wife and mother-in-law how uncomfortable it is, but he doesn't stop the comments, even when confronted. He claims he wants to be close to me, but refuses to address the concerns of his wife, daughter, and son-in-law. It's reached the point that I try to avoid my in-laws when they visit, including volunteering to work extra shifts at work. It concerns me that he occasionally makes these tasteless comments around my young daughters. I think he's a dirty old man. I can't stand being around him, but my wife and mother-in-law overlook his comments and think the world of him. Am I overreacting? How do I continue to interact with them given my distaste for him? Signed, Creeped Out in Georgia. Dear Creeped Out, I don't blame you for being creeped out. Your father-in-law appears to be not only a dirty old man, but an obsessive one. While your wife and her mother may be prepared to overlook his inappropriate behavior, I don't think your young daughters should be subjected to it. For that matter, neither should you be. If your father-in-law wants to be close to you, the price he will have to pay will be to watch his mouth, or you will take the girls to a park, a lunch, a movie, etc. while he's there. Dear Abby, my sister Elaine and I live in different states. Until last year, we were communicating by phone and text. She and her family were set to visit me, but all of a sudden Elaine stopped responding to my texts and phone calls. I finally texted her, asking if she was still planning to visit. She texted me back the four words, "No, we're not coming," and we haven't communicated since. This isn't the first time my sister has cut me off. Usually, after a few months of silence, she will call me and act like nothing happened, offering no apology or explanation. This hadn't happened in years, so I thought Elaine had finally grown out of it. I don't know why she's mad at me. I could speculate, but I resent playing this game. Having a relationship with her feels like walking through a minefield. I never know what I might say that will set her off. I have considered writing her a letter telling her how hurtful her behavior is, but then I feel like it might enable her. I'm also afraid I'll say more that she will take offense to. Should I write her or just write her off? Signed, Enough Already in Florida. Dear Enough, I think you should do both. Your sister Elaine is a pain in the posterior. Write and tell her how childish and rude her silent treatment has been, and that you have had your fill of it, then write her off.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.